Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by our good friends from Hy-Vee and Toyson Ford. Dan Casper here with you as always. Big thanks for tuning in. Also, hey, really quick, before we get into things, I want to remind you, we've got some swag now. We got a swag provider, Resonance Branding Company. All right, we got some items, whether it's the radio show or the podcast. All right, the link is in the description, the podcast description here. If you want to check it out and help us spread the good word about the Dan Casper radio show or the Man Cave podcast. So shout out to Resonance Branding Company, the official swag provider of this podcast and the radio show. Oh, man, we got lots we're going to be hitting up on this episode of the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about a possible new NFL kickoff rule that's kind of confusing, kind of creative. You like it? Do we like it or not? So we're going to hit that up. We're going to talk some Bucks. Big win for the Milwaukee Bucks against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Also, going to throw in some Brewers chat here with opening day just a few short days away. But we begin talking some college hoops. Not to reopen a wound or anything from late Friday night, with that loss to James Madison. But what kind of word or what word would you use or to describe this Badger basketball season? Like, I've been trying to think about this, and the only word that I can, and it's not very creative, but the only word I can come up with at this point is like weird. Like, it's almost like an EKG with the ups and downs of this year too, where it was just like perplexing. Maybe, I don't know, because we opened up the year not sure what to expect from this team. Didn't really have high expectations. You know, obviously they weren't ranked top 25 in that, and then they started to win games and they started to creep in the top 25, and then you had Badger fans saying, see, national peeps overlooking Badger basketball again, overlooking the Badgers again. Then they win. You know, they beat, at that point, Michigan State. Remember that three-game stretch at the beginning of the year? They beat Michigan State. They beat Marquette, blown out by Arizona. But they take two out of three in those three games. And we were all like, all right, that's pretty darn good. And then they just continued to win and got as high as number six in the country. Heading into that week where it was it Nebraska? I believe it was Nebraska. And then you have Purdue. And then you're like, hey, by the end of the week, if they beat those two teams, especially Purdue, could we be talking about the Badgers being in the top four or maybe in a position to be in a one seed in the tournament? Well, looked like they were going to win against Nebraska. Then whatever happened in that second half completely derailed the season. They end up losing that game. They lose to Purdue. Then they lose a boatload of other games, including to lowly Michigan, and just come tumbling down. And they go into, you know, the Big Ten Conference tournament as a five seed. Then they start to win a couple games, and then they beat Purdue in the conference tournament, probably move up from a six to a five. That win moves them up from a six to a five. Go toe-to-toe with Illinois, but can't close it out. But for the most part, Badgers fans being like, okay, feeling a little bit better. Feeling a little bit better about this team. They get a tough draw in the tournament. James Madison team that won 31 games, beat Michigan State at the beginning of the year, was a very popular pick to be that 5-12 upset. And lo and behold, Badgers kind of resorted back to their big bugaboos or issues that was plaguing them throughout the season. Shot selection, turnovers galore in this thing. I mean, it was like, oh, we're back to that from, you know, a month ago. So, one and done. The end of this Badger basketball season, this weird, this perplexing, this high and low, up and down Badger basketball season. Now it's filled with questions of the future of the program, the immediate future of the program. We know one, One thing that's going to happen, Connor Essigian's already put it out on social media. He's going to transfer. He's entering the transfer portal, which I don't think is a huge surprise. Let's be real. I mean, this was a player that is probably one of the biggest question marks from this season. Like, what happens? You know, last year you look at the minutes he's played and that, and you look at this year, could barely get on the court. Was it because of his defensive play and, you know, some injuries kind of derailing that? But I don't think it's that big of a surprise considering how his season went this year that he's entering the transfer portal. But because of the change in college sports, we kind of have to hold our breaths for some of the best players on this team. And I'm talking about AJ Storr. AJ Storr, pretty noncommittal after the game about whether he would, one, be back with the Badgers, like whether it was going to the NBA or even going to the transfer portal. He was pretty noncommittal on both sides. According to, I was reading a little bit from Evan Flood from Badgers 24/7. And he said that after the game in the locker room, I don't know. I'm just still thinking about the loss and my teammates. Shout out Tyler Wall. He just played his last game in a Badger uniform. True legend for the Wisconsin Badgers. I'm frustrated. I didn't finish like I wanted to. And a good follow-up from 24/7. They asked Storr if his only two options next season were playing with the Badgers or entering the draft, and if he could potentially leave for another program, non-committal. He said, I don't really know right now. I'm just thinking about this loss right now. I love playing with these guys. Sad I won't get to play with T-Wall again. I just love playing with these guys. So, I mean, he's had nothing but positive stuff to say about the Badgers and this team, and I get it. You know, emotions are running high after a game. You know, you're incredibly disappointed that your season's over with. That's the thing about sports. When you get into a postseason play and you lose that game, it's an immediate, like, end to your season. There's no build-up to it. It's just like, boom, you're done. You're done playing for the year. And then you got to answer all these questions minutes after that. So I get, you know, he didn't really want to talk about his future and such. But given the current state of college athletics with transfer portals and all that, it's got Badger fans worrying. And I'm one of those too. Like, is he going to be back next year? Is he going to be back with the Badgers next year? If, you know, he decides, hey, I'm not ready for the draft, potentially could get a little bit better. Is he going to stay with the Badgers to do that? Or is he going to go to his third team in 3 years? Or he's a St. John's transfer. I hope the kid's back. I really do. I want to see him paired up with Blackwell and such. But that's the thing is, like, even like everybody on this team, if you're not, you know, a guy like Tyler Waller or a graduating senior or guy who's out of eligibility, you're holding your breath for everybody. Well, maybe for some Badger fans, they'd like to see some players maybe transfer or leave. But you get what I'm getting at here, that your best players, you're just kind of holding your breath that they don't decide to hit the transfer portal and go somewhere else. It's free agency after every single year in college sports. Every single year, it's free agency. Even with your current players, you're trying to, like, do a free agency pitch to them to stay, to kind of, quote, re-sign, re-up with your team. Like, I don't think I'd want to be a college coach right now in this day and age with this, you know, kind of in the back of your mind, like, dudes, some of these guys, gals, they could leave after a year and go to a different team. It's free agency after every single, it's like all these players essentially have 1 year deals. To kind of put it in a pro perspective, they all got like 1 year deals. You're playing on a year-to-year basis. I mean, you can you even really build a program these days? Like the old school Badgers, if you will, under Bo Ryan, can you build a program these days? I don't know if you can. I think it needs that you've got to find those players that are going to be committed to stay in the program for a few years. And I think those are becoming few, far, in between. It's a year-by-year basis. So I don't know what the plan is going to be for the Badgers this offseason. You know, I know they've got some recruits coming in that are highly thought of in that, but on the Greg Gard front, there's a lot of Badgers fans. I don't know if it's a 50-50 split or if it's a majority or slightly under the majority over there, but there's a good chunk of Badgers fans that maybe want to see a change at their head coaching position. I don't personally think that's going to happen at this point in time in the game. But I do think it's reasonable to expect that Greg Gard's probably going to enter next year under the hot on a hot seat, a little bit of a hot seat. And I base that opinion based off of what we've seen from Chris McIntosh in his first few years as the athletic director in Wisconsin. He's got huge goals and huge aspirations for his athletics department, for his teams. He wants to take it up a notch. It's not just necessarily competing for Big Ten championships. He fully believes and he fully expects and he fully wants his teams to compete for national championships. And let's be real, it's going to get harder. It's going to get harder in football and it's going to get harder in basketball now with the Big Ten Conference expanding. Oregon, USC, UCLA, those teams coming on over. It's going to be incredibly hard for these Badgers teams, especially on basketball, the way they're currently maybe constructed. They got to change the way maybe they do business a bit. That's going to get tougher to come out of that conference. Now, maybe because it'll be a tougher conference, that'll benefit them. It'll kind of force the hand to adjust, to be better, because you have to be. I think that's what a lot of fans are hoping for and expecting, but I feel like Gard's going to go into next year with a lot to kind of prove. To show McIntosh, like, hey, we can win here. We can win at Wisconsin. There's going to be doubters. There's a lot of doubters right now that this team can win. Win at a high level, like winning a national championship or competing, getting back to a Sweet 16, an Elite Eight, a Final Four. There's a lot of doubters out there right now. And I personally think McIntosh is going to give him another shot, going to open up the year with Greg Gard, but a little bit under the hot seat. Because I think you just look at football, men's hockey, and you look at the quick turnaround of the hockey team for the men's side, first year, already back at the tournament, on a year that was supposed to be, all right, lower expectations, getting a new coaching staff in. They blew that out of the water. Football was a little underwhelming, but I think there's still excitement with Luke Fickell and such. So, I mean, when you make bold moves like that, when you bring in coaches like Luke Fickell and Hastings, it puts everybody else, I know, maybe besides Mark Johnson and Kelly Sheffield at volleyball, because all they do is make deep runs in the national tournament and win national championships. But it put a lot of other programs on notice, and I think right now that Badger men's basketball team that's going to be a big offseason for them. You know, hitting the transfer portal, can they get more guys coming in? Because I honestly feel like now, college basketball especially, it's a year-by-year thing. I don't think you can – if you got an incredibly talented freshman, a talented freshman that's ready to play now, don't think you can hide them on the bench and redshirt them anymore. You might have to play them right away just so they stay around. So that's what I feel like is going to be the plan or the mindset right now. I mean, you've got teams already. Michigan's got a new head coach, and West Virginia's already got a new head coach. You know, you're kind of looking out there, well, who would be some other options and such? And that's the thing, like, you know, who would be that person that Wisconsin would bring in? It's not going to be Lamont anymore. He just re-upped at South Carolina for a nice big deal. I don't think Tony Bennett is probably the the number one target for a lot of Badgers fans anymore. I mean, there's questions surrounding that style of play and that program, too. And that's just a few years from a national championship. So I'll be honest, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know of a potential. I mean, you'd probably be looking at some D1s, maybe some mid-conference teams, that sort of thing. But, yeah. Ultimately, I think Guard's going to get another shot. But it's a big offseason, a big upcoming next year for Coach Guard. And let's be real, I hope he succeeds. We want our coaches to succeed because that means our teams are winning. So I hope they figure things out, and I hope they have a really, really good year next year. There's a good article, too, from Ben Kenny, BadgersWire.USAToday.com. Reasons for and reasons against bringing back Greg Guard for the Badger basketball team. Not going to go through every write-up, but I'll go through the fours and against. For, postseason failure. Against, regular season success. To which I know the counter to that or the thought to that from a lot of people are going to be like, well, it's all about postseason success. And you'd be right. I would agree with you. Also have to get to the postseason in college basketball by having a good regular season. So, four, the combination of recruiting and development hasn't been good enough. I'd agree with that. Against, the team returns a wealth of talent for 2024-25. That's assuming everybody comes back. I know Chucky's probably coming back, but to me, the big ones out there is AJ Storr and John Blackwell. If they come back, yes, you got some talent coming back. Four, the team lacks a peak season. There are a lot of good from the Badgers, but not great. It doesn't feel as if the program can produce a core like that 14-15 team had. Therefore, it's hard to see this team actually contending for a Final Four trip in a national title. Against, March Madness is a high-variance event. I agree with that. Four, is the program set up well for the next 10 years? It's kind of a big unknown. Against, something we were talking about a little bit earlier. Who's the replacement? Says Ben mentions Tony Bennett. Probably wouldn't leave Virginia. Plus, as he says, is an all-time NCAA tournament underachiever, minus the one season when they won a national championship. TJ Olzelberger is in a great spot at Iowa State. That, I think, would be the dream hire for a lot of Badgers fans, is to get TJ away from Iowa State. He played college ball at Whitewater. He was born in Milwaukee, so he's a Wisconsin kid. I should say kid. Wisconsin guy. But right now, I mean, Iowa State's in the Sweet 16. You know, they were thought that could be a one seed in the tournament. So, I mean, would he leave that position at Iowa State? Would he view Wisconsin potentially as an upgrade? I don't know. I really don't know right now. Maybe. But who knows? But he's in a good spot right now. I think that would be the dream hire, but I wouldn't count on your eggs on that happening. Against, basketball is different than football. He says here, this isn't a real reason, more of a pushback on some of the commentary surrounding the situation. Basketball isn't football. Paul Chryst and Greg Guard's situations are entirely different, just like the shape of the ball in each sport, so the two cannot be compared when making an argument either way. So, all right, let's take a quick break, and I want to talk a little bit about the possible new NFL kickoff rule. We're going to throw some Bucks and Brewers chats in here as well. So, quick break. We'll be back after these few words. Perks. I love Perks. You love Perks. We all love Perks. And one of the best perks you could find in the Chippewa Valley is Hy-Vee Perks. Hy-Vee Perks is a free and easy program for Hy-Vee shoppers. Access exclusive Perks prices, earn discounts on gas when you purchase designated products at Hy-Vee, and save more with exclusive deals, offers, and rewards. The best part? It's free to join. Not a part of Hy-Vee Perks yet? No worries. Just stop by Hy-Vee in Eau Claire to sign up. Start taking advantage of the best shopping deals in the Chippewa Valley right now with Hy-Vee and Hy-Vee Perks. We've got owners' meetings going on in the NFL right now in Florida. We've got some coaches. It looks like the AFC coaches for their breakfast. I was talking a little bit with the media. Just looking at, I've been kind of scrolling through here a little bit with some of the reporters who are there and who are tweeting out some of the quotes from there. I don't know. Maybe I might be falling into that smoke screen there. I might be falling into it a little bit, but I got to tell you, I think this draft might have a lot of movements for some trade-ups. We're 1 month away from today, 1 month away from the first round of the NFL draft. And you got Sean Payton. He may be looking for a quarterback. He used the word realistic about when he was answering a question about how realistic it would be for the Broncos to move up in a draft. Yeah, this was from Ian Rapoport. Here at the AFC Coaches Breakfast, I asked Sean Payton how realistic it was for him to be a potential trade-up team. Realistic was his answer. We know they're looking for a quarterback. I mean, if you're the Cardinals right now, at number four, you got to be feeling pretty good. Jared Mayo, the head coach for the Patriots, said they're open for business, but they're also open for drafting. So, yeah, you said here, we're open to trading the pick. We're open to taking the guy there. Do the Patriots look at this thing and be like, okay, we know we could get a lot in return right now. We know we could get a lot. We got a lot of needs. We got a lot of holes. Do we bypass a quarterback this year? Does come with a little bit of risk, too. Let's not kid ourselves. It does come with a little bit of risk at that point. But, man, I feel like we may get, you know, if you're a team that, like the Patriots or like the Cardinals right now, especially maybe a team like the Cardinals, boy, you might be getting a lot in return for that fourth overall pick. And as Jim Harbaugh said, and one of his quotes from this morning, you know, he's kind of paraphrasing. He said, but everybody's expecting four quarterbacks to go in the first four picks, which means the draft kind of essentially starts at where they're at number five. Which he's right. He's absolutely right. More quarterbacks, the better for a team like Green Bay. Push everybody down just a couple more spots, potentially, for them to pick at that spot. But one of the big topics out there, Andy Reid apparently is in favor of this. He was asked about it this morning. He is in favor of this. That's one coach out there that I've seen so far. I'm sure there's a couple more. But this new NFL kickoff rule proposal. Okay. I'm not going to go through all of the other stuff like the alignments and stuff like that. The big thing I want to talk about is this landing zone that they're proposing out there. Now, it's kind of complicated. I know Pro Football Talk was kind of saying out there that might not get approved at this meeting, but potentially the one in May, because it is a little confusing and there's a lot of stuff to kind of digest with it. But here it is. If you missed me breaking it down a little bit in the first hour, again, this is from the NFL.com website, operations.nfl.com, if you want to kind of take a look at everything. But this landing zone. So the landing zone is the area between the receiving team's goal line and its 20-yard line. So essentially, the red zone. Okay? Red zone, landing zone. Goal line to the 20-yard line. Now that we got that established, here we go. You ready for this? Any kick that hits short of the landing zone, so like the 21, the 22, 23, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that kick is treated like a kick that's out of bounds, and the ball will be spotted at the 40-yard line. Play would be blown dead as soon as the kick lands short of the landing zone. Think about that. Any kick that hits short of the landing zone is treated like a kickoff out of bounds, and the ball spotted at the 40-yard line. Play would be blown dead as soon as the kick lands short of the landing zone. Any kick that hits in the landing zone, any kick that hits in the landing zone must be returned. So that 0 to 20 has to be returned. Any kick that hits in the landing zone and then goes into the end zone, must be returned or downed by the receiving team. If downed, then the ball goes to the 20. Not the 25, the 20. So any kick that hits in a landing zone and then it rolls into the end zone, it'll either be downed and you get it at the 20 or you have to return it. A kick hits in the end zone, stays in bounds. So it hits in the end zone, stays in bounds, doesn't go out in the back of the end zone. Has to be returned or downed. If it is downed, you go all the way up to the 35. So not the 20, not the 25, not the 30, the 35-yard line. Any kick that goes out of the back of the end zone, in the air or on a bounce, you're up to the 35. So they're really highlighting teams, kickers specifically, at getting this kick into that landing zone. The accuracy there. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Now, there is still onside kicks. Onside kick. Here's a little bit on here. Fourth quarter begins. The team trailing has the opportunity to declare an onside kick to the officials. Current onside kickoff rules would apply if an onside kick goes beyond the setup zone untouched. Kicking team penalized for, you know, like normal. Return team would start to drive at the 20-yard line. Same stuff over there, too. So, this landing zone. I want to focus on the landing zone, a part of this. What do you think of this? I mean, this kickoff thing has been an issue, a talking point, a thing that the NFL has tried to adjust, change, adapt, whatever we want to say, over the last few years, where it seemed like at one point, not that long ago, that they were trying to get rid of the kickoff. It seemed like that's what they were trying to do, right? Like, it's like at this point, it's like, okay, just start the drive at the 20, the 25, or whatever. But now, they didn't have hardly any kick returns last year. They didn't have any in the Super Bowl. And it's like, nope, we got to bring it back. It's boring. We need more excitement. So they're trying to get more returns in the game. They want that back. They want it back. So this puts a lot more pressure on kickers to be accurate. You know, you factor in weather elements, wind and that, it could have an effect on a kickoff now. This would kind of resemble the XFL kickoffs from 2020-2023 seasons to increase the number of returns while trying to decrease injuries by minimizing some, you know, those high-speed collisions. So reading a little bit more here, too, if this approval passes, kickers would still kick from the 35-yard line with the other 10 players on the team starting at the opposing 40-yard line. One or two returners can be in the landing zone from the goal line in the 20-yard, from the goal line to the 20-yard line, while the other players on the return team would be in the, quote, setup zone between the 30 and the 35-yard lines. Only the kicker and returners can move until the ball hits the ground or is touched. Yeah. There can no longer be surprise onside kicks, since teams will have to inform officials if they plan on running one. A lot. There's a lot going on here. Right? That's their, you know, officials. They got to figure this out. You're completely kind of changing your whole special teams operations. You know, now you're okay. It kind of increases the need to make sure you go get a kick returner now. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff here, and I'm sure I missed a couple of other things here. But what are your thoughts on this? Landing zone, no surprise onside kicks. What are your thoughts? Is it too gimmicky? Do you like the creativity of it? Here's the thing. I like the fact that They're trying to get returns more involved in the game. I like the fact that they're doing this. And I get and I understand you've got to make the game safer. You're looking out for the players. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. But the one thing that I don't like about when it comes to sport, not just the football, but other sports, when it gets really complicating where it just like it's where you don't understand exactly what's going on. And I get that's the need, you know, that's why you have the Gene Steratores, the Mike Pereiras, you know, these officials coming on and explaining, you know, the rulings and that. But I think when you get to a point where it's so complicated, like the perfect example is pass interference. We don't know what the hell pass interference is anymore. Or we don't know what the heck a catch is anymore. You know, it's gotten so, you know, they've adjusted it so many times to where we're all kind of confused, like, what in the heck is a catch now? So there's a lot of different stuff going on here in terms of, like, landing zones and starting off, like, you know, it's not as simple anymore as, like, oh, touchback? Okay, at the 20. Now you got a couple different things that could be, well, it could be the 20, could be the 35, or it could be the 40. So we're going to have to adjust to it. It's going to have to, you know, we're going to have to get used to it. I think this is going to pass. I think 24 out of 32 teams have to vote in favor of this. It sounds like the special teams coordinators, they're the ones who are presenting it. They're in favor of it. Coaches are in favor of it. But it's going to be, I think, confusing for us fans watching these games early on, kind of getting adjusted to it. But I like the fact that they're trying to incorporate more returns in this game. I didn't like the fact a few years ago when they were trying to really limit the returns. I hated that. I mean, at that point in time, you might as well just started the game at the 25, 20-yard line, and then you only have kickers in for extra points and field goals. This makes the kicker a little bit more important. It adds a little bit more to the kicking game. You can't just maybe go get a kicker just to bring him in for, okay, your only job is to, you know, work on your field goals and extra points. And it's a big one, obviously. Packers fans, you know this. We know this from Anders last year. But it puts a little bit more on their shoulders now, too. You can't just maybe, you know, we'll just pick up somebody off the street to go kick for us this weekend. Puts a little bit more pressure on their shoulders. And I like that. I like it. And I like the fact that we're trying to get back to returns. Is it a little gimmicky? Yeah, it's probably a little gimmicky. And I'm not always in favor of gimmicky stuff. But if the ultimate end result in this is that we get more returns and we potentially get some big plays in the return game, I'm for it. I want to get back to that. I want to get back to the Desmond Howards, the Dante Halls, the Devin Hesters. I mean, if we're putting Devin Hester in the Pro Football Hall of Fame because of his return ability and now we have a game that we're not having any returns, what are we doing? And maybe I'm a little biased, too, because Green Bay's got Keyshawn Nixon, who has shown that he's a pretty good returner, too. Completely can change the tide of a game. Let's talk some Bucks to recap a big win last night for your second place Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference. Here's your, here's your Are You Serious little nugget for this Monday morning. The Monday morning Are You Serious nugget. This was the first time. I didn't think it was this long. But this is the first time since February 3rd that the Bucks. It says here that from ESPN, this marked the first time since a February 3rd victory at Dallas that the Bucks had Giannis, Middleton, and Dame on the floor for the same game. It was also the first time since January 31st that they had their preferred starting lineup of Giannis, Dame, Middleton, Brooke, Malik Beasley. That's according to ESPN. That's an RU series. We're at the end of March. We're at the end of March here, and we finally got this preferred starting lineup, the main starting lineup, your number one starting lineup. Last night's game, I think you got to start when you look at it, and I know Middleton got the triple-double, 11 points, 10 boards, 10 assists. Giannis was, unbelievable again last night with his 30 points, 19 rebounds. The man shot 13 of 18 from the field. Highly efficient. He had 8 offensive boards alone. This was probably one of the best, and I know you could probably make the case that it was the best, but easily one of the best defensive performances from the Bucks this season. Easily. They came out in that second half, especially in the third quarter there, and just clamped it down on the defensive end. They were just flying around. They looked like they had more energy, more enthusiasm. They held one of the better offensive teams in the league to just 17 points in the third quarter, outscoring them 34-17. Alexander was held to just 12 points for OKC. 12 points. That's it. 5 of 12 from the field. 0 for 3 from 3. And the guy played 30 minutes. This is one of the better players in the entire league. A guy who's third in scoring. Averaging 30.5 per game. And the Bucks held him to just 12 points. Heck, you're looking at some of his... I've got his scoring logs. The last time he didn't reach at least 20 points in a game, you got to go back. And I'm scrolling. January 16th against the Clippers when he had 19 points. Is that his lowest scoring out? He had 17 on December 2nd against Dallas. And that might be his... Okay, he had 7 against Denver back on October 29th. So his second lowest scoring output of the season. Easily one of the best defensive performances from the Bucks last night. In a game going up against one of the top teams in the Western Conference, a team that's battling for that number one seed. Dame played 33 minutes, wasn't his... he didn't put up a boatload of points like we've been, seeing a few times lately. Just 11 points for Dame time. 4 of 12 overall from the field. But you got some nice bench production, too. Pat Connaughton, 19 minutes, 11 points. Bobby Portis, 28 minutes, 15 points. Jay Crowder came off the bench, 10 points. Brooke Lopez helping out, 14 points. Outside of Giannis just kind of taking control, you had a lot of contributions. No big-time contributions. It wasn't like a two-person race to lead the Bucks to victory last night. I think everybody contributed in their own way. Middleton, this is a role I like to see from Middleton here now, too. A guy who is not only, a scoring threat, and before this game, in his two games back against Phoenix and Boston, the man put out their 22 points. But these last three games from Chris Middleton, we've been seeing him become more of a distributor. His last three games since coming back, 7 assists, 6 assists, and then last night, 10 assists. I like this role that we are seeing from Chris Middleton. This third option, but he's distributing a little bit more. Kind of being a facilitator. And, throughout his career, he's averaged 3.9 assists per season. But this is the type of role I like to see from Middleton right now. You're not counting on him to go out there and score 30 points. If he does, great, awesome. But this third option role behind Giannis, behind Dame, but a guy that's kind of getting everybody set, getting everybody involved over here too. Now I just hope this entire team can stay healthy. Because if this entire team is healthy and this is the type of performance we get, I know I'm putting a lot into just one game, from last night. But since this was the first time we've seen these guys, this preferred starting lineup since January, the big three since February, this is what we want to see when it comes to the postseason, when it comes to playoff time coming up here. That was a good win last night by the Bucks. It was a fantastic win by the Bucks last night. And I know Giannis, at least from some people, are getting talked about as a MVP candidate. I don't know if he'll win. I'll look at the odds, you know, where he's at right now at this point in time. But I know there's been some talk about him. And you look out, I mean, 30 points and shooting over 70% from the field. He's second in the league in scoring. He's sixth in rebounds. 30.7 points per game. 11.3 rebounds per game. 6.4 assists per game. That's top 15. He's top 10 in field goal percentage. This is a guy, too, who is just playing incredibly well as of late. Really good. In the month of March, he is averaging 31.3 points per game, 6.8 assists per game, 12 rebounds per game. Heck, the man is even shooting 70.8% from the charity stripe, and he's shooting 60.7% from the field. In fact, his field goal percentage is actually a little bit down this month. He was 65.5 in February. But he's playing some really good hoops right now. Fantastic hoops right now. His rebounds are up from the previous month. I mean, this is a guy that, let's just keep it bubble wrapped here a little bit though too. I know he's gone through some hamstring stuff and some tendonitis and that Achilles, but he's on fire right now. He's playing really well. This, I think, with Dame and him now being on the same page, we're starting to see more of that pick-and-roll action. Middleton's coming back, being a little bit more of a distributor, facilitator, third option over there. It's starting, again, to quote the great Lou Brown from Major League, maybe it's just starting to come together, Pepper. Starting to come together. 11 more games left in this regular season. They got the Lakers coming up tomorrow. They hit the road here for a little bit against the Pelicans in Atlanta and Washington. Then five straight at home where they have been really good. You got Memphis, you got Toronto, you got the Knicks, Boston, and Orlando. That Boston-Orlando back-to-back in that second week in April, that's going to be interesting to see how they play that. And then they got OKC again and then Orlando after that on the road. But maybe, depending on how everything goes, they'll have a two seed locked up at that point. Might be wishful thinking there. But when you got a Boston-Orlando back-to-back, might be a case where Middleton doesn't play in one of those or some of those guys don't play in that. Which one do they view as maybe a little bit more important at that point? Boston may not be full effort in there. Orlando's probably still going to be playing for some positioning there. So we still got some things, even though with just 11 games left to go here, a lot to still be played for. Get that two seed. Hopefully they get it earlier rather than later, where they can, you know, last couple games of the regular season, maybe rest some of your guys like a Giannis, like a Dame who has played a ton of minutes, Middleton over there too. But last night's win against OKC, that was big. That was a nice win. And I think one of their best defensive performances all season long, if not the best defensive performance they've had. Let's take a quick break, and we'll wrap up the podcast with a few quick notes about the Brewers, as we are just a few days away from opening day. We'll be back after these quick words. Are you thinking of taking a spring break trip this year? Or maybe you're already eyeing up that summer vacation, but you're not quite sure if you have the proper transportation for those road trips? Hey, that's where Toyce and Ford can help you. Toyce and Ford has a wide selection of new and used vehicles for you to check out. And at Toyce and Ford, they treat you like an honored guest. They will work with you on financing no matter what your budget may be. So if you're looking for that new vehicle this year, head to Toyce and Ford, located at 1000 Chippewa Crossing Boulevard in Chippewa Falls. Opening day party get together coming up on Thursday at our good friends from Hy-Vee. Gonna have some food and such over there. I was talking with the folks on Saturday. Was it Saturday or Sunday? Saturday when I was over there doing some shopping, ran into the good peeps over there. So getting ready for opening day on Thursday. But if you got some time, maybe you're looking for an extended lunch period, or maybe you got the day off or anything like that, stop on by at Hy-Vee. Be around 11:30 for our opening day party. I know the Brewers will begin at about 12:10, 12:15, around there, first pitch, going up against the Mets. So, but got a couple more games on the spring training schedule here for the crew. Got a game this afternoon against the Rockies. You're going to be able to hear that on the radio dials of 105.1 FM and 790 AM. Colin Ray, another final tune-up for him. Then another game on tomorrow against the Rockies. And then we got opening day. Aaron Ashby's going to get that one for tomorrow. But a couple of pitchers of note from this past weekend here for the crew. So we got Wade Miley. Wade Miley got some action in. Just on Saturday, he pitched two innings, gave up one hit, a couple strikeouts there. But Joe Ross came in, and if you care about this stuff, did pick up the win. It was a spring training game. But Joe Ross came in, pitched five innings, gave up two hits, just one earned run, one walk, struck out eight. Joe Ross is a guy that we haven't talked a whole lot about. We haven't heard, I would say, we haven't heard a ton about the spring training. He's a guy that is a buy low, low risk type of signing that was made a few months ago. That's like, oh yeah, that's a Brewer signing there. Guy hasn't pitched at the major league levels here for a couple years. You know, last we saw him was in 2021 with Washington. Brewers bringing him in. Maybe, you know, just kind of like fill in sort of thing after losing Corbin Burns or trading Corbin Burns. They had him in before Corbin Burns, but, you know, Brandon Woodruff, they know, wasn't going to be pitching this year. So they bring him in, low risk. But right now, I mean, after coming off of that game, as our good friend Dominic, who hosts the Brewers postgame show on the Brewers Radio Network, said, bubble wrap this kid, or bubble wrap this guy. I guess we can't call him a kid, but bubble wrap him and get him ready for the regular season. Fantastic performance from him coming off from this past weekend. Now, is that what we should expect from him in the regular season? I hope so. Odds are probably not going to happen. Probably not going to happen, but dude looked good in that tune-up. Looked really good. It's good to see Wade Miley get some spring training action. He's going to begin the season on the injured list, though, it sounds like. He's going to at least miss the first turn through the rotation, maybe a couple turns through the rotation here. D.L. Hall also got another start. Five innings, five hits, two earned runs, struck out four. Sure seems like this youngster is going to be part of this starting rotation too. So, I mean, if we factor out Wade Miley, he will be in it at some point. But if we factor out Wade Miley, it seems like the rotation's probably going to be Freddie, Colin Ray, Joe Ross, D.L. Hall. Maybe they kind of piggyback some stuff with Ashby and that, but and then, you know, Wade Miley will come back when he's ready to come back here. Major League or MLB.com did their 2024 projected opening day lineups. Now, we know this is just one game out of 162, but it's opening day, right? It's opening day. Little extra flair, a little bit of excitement. Guys want to be a part of the opening day roster, want to be a part of the opening day lineup. And while we know, most part, a lot of these guys who are going to be on that opening day roster, we may not necessarily know how that opening, that first game, what that lineup card is going to look like. Well, MLB.com tried their best to put it together. And this is what they got for the Brewers. Number batting in the leadoff, Garrett Mitchell playing center field. Number two, William Contreras. Number three, Christian Yelich playing in left field. Batting cleanup, Rhys Hoskins, first base. Willie Adames batting fifth. Sal Frelick, they got here, playing right field, batting sixth. Jackson Chirio, DHing in his first game, batting seventh. Joey Ortiz getting the start at third. Bryce Terang then playing second base. Chirio is in line to become the youngest Brewer to debut on opening day since Robin Young. It says here, too, it's just a matter of how Milwaukee wants to set up the lineup to attack lefty Jose Quintana, who has had a ton of experience going up against the Brewers, as we know. This time with the Cubs, mostly Cardinals and Pirates also on there too. So we're just a few days away here. Again, I think the Sal Frelick one there, Joey Ortiz, how much playing time is Sal Frelick going to get at third base? Is it going to be an even split between him and Ortiz? Andrew Monasterio, how does he fit into this equation? You know, Jackson Chirio, would he debut as a DH, maybe to get the butterflies out of there? I don't know. We'll see what we'll find out, I guess, in a couple days, right? We'll find out then. But we're getting a little bit closer. We're getting a little bit closer, and I feel like we pretty much know how the majority of this team is going to look like, right? We know the majority. There's a couple of maybe depth positions up in the air at this point in time. Do they keep the three catchers? Do they try to find a trade partner for, you know, Eric Haas? I think that's probably one of the bigger questions right now, because Eric Haas has been lighting it up in spring training. Is he forcing the crew to carry three catchers, at least to begin the season? Maybe. Brewers have done that with first baseman. That's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Again, it is opening day. It's not a set lineup for the rest of the season. Odds are it probably will change after the first game, first couple of games. We've seen that how many times when it's come to the Brewers here. And that is going to do it for us on this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by Hy-Vee and Toyson Ford. Big thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. If you got a few seconds, if you wouldn't mind, give us a 5-star rating on like Spotify and Apple, and a positive review on Apple. That way others can find the podcast too. I would really appreciate that to all of you listening right now. That would mean a lot. So, and don't forget to click on that follow and subscribe button, because sometimes we drop multiple episodes in a day, so you never want to miss another episode. So make sure you follow and subscribe. It's free, so it's simple. But until next time, I'm Dan Casper, and I will talk to you on the next episode of the Man Cave Podcast.